You know, it's really been a task trying to put this webcast together. I have so much to say, and I feel like I have so little time to really say it, to get it said right. I thought about an incident. It happened years ago. The girls were, I think, in junior high, in the back seat of the car. My wife was in the front seat of the car with me. We were driving east on Slauson Avenue, just going under the 110 freeway. And there was a black man, young man, naked, prancing up and down the street, high on something. Lucy said, "Girls, put your head down. Don't look at this." I wanted to pull the car over and see what I can do for the brother. And I didn't. I kept driving. And I muttered something like, "Isn't it a shame?" Yeah, it's a shame because I professed to be a Christian pastor on the way to pastor a church that I love, people that I love. I see what drugs did to the community. So I became, during that time, fixated in my mind to become a pretty good exegete, to tell people what the Word of God said about living rightly. And that's just one incident that carried me on that week. Hundreds and hundreds, literally thousands of opportunities came for me to minister to men in my community, and I shoved it aside. The only ministering to my community that I ever did was under the auspices of being a pastor. And, you know, it's kind of hard for me to talk about it now because I wasn't on the DL, you know what that is, having sex outside of, you know, being with my wife. I wasn't doing that, but I was in the closet. A gay man married, because that was the safest thing to do. Back in the day, you didn't dare come out and tell people how you felt about other men. You would be ostracized. Find yourself looking for a job. Quiet is kept. If you came out and said anything about that as a pastor, you'd be looking for a church to pastor because no one would have you. So what did I do? I went on and became, I like to say, one of the finest exegete, African-American exegetes that ever lived on the planet. Man, I still got tons of my sermon material. I threw tons of it out. Try to give it to guys, but nobody wants that. They don't listen to that anymore. You know, they find out that, well, why did you marry your wife? I'm not going to bescathe my wife of that because I love my wife. She knew who I was. And we had that discussion. And I said, I need to love you and start a family with you because I have to be successful. And I didn't know how to be successful back in 1967 when I got out of the Army and got back to Los Angeles here. I could not see my way clear on being successful coming out as a gay man. Just impossible. And I never was a gay man that wanted to be a woman. I never was like that. I loved the fact that I was created a male. I like the species of a male. The Army taught me that. The military taught me that. They put that in my head. I recall when I was in the military, there was a gay white couple that was, I was stationed overseas in Korea. And it was around this time of the year, Christmas, and somebody caught them. They were in the bed with each other. And the next day, those guys were out of the 304 Signal Battalion, gone, like they never existed. So I learned then at 22, 23 years old, you don't dare tell anybody that you're gay. You know, they call you a fag, sissy, a punk, and all those discriminating words. And I had heard enough of that when I was a kid in school. I'm telling you. So I understand the pain, the hurt, that a lot of my brothers and sisters feel. I understand the pain that anyone in the LGBT community feels when they have to tell their family, their loved ones, that they don't think on the terms that other people in the family and loved ones think on. You're not thinking about going in that direction, doing that. How do you survive? Well, I survived. And you know what? I've been trying to get out of doing this because I would never deny God in my life. I would never deny God ever. You know, it's a kind of a thing where, well, if you come out and say that, they're going to think that you never knew God. God was the one that called me into ministry. God is the one that called me. This is the good part about God dealing with me. And I have a dear friend of mine, Dan. He was one of my students, and you know, Dan told me that he doesn't believe in God anymore. That, you know, that the God thing is a hoax, and that he. I'm going to tell you what happened in my life was no hoax. You know, it was no hoax, people. God, just out of the darkness, called me into, and I got to say this, and I know I'm going to sound very religious and very stupefied to you, very out of my mind, but he called me out of a world of darkness into his marvelous light. Now, that's the only way that I could explain it, because when I got out of the Army, I wasn't looking for a girlfriend, a boyfriend. I wasn't looking for any friends. I was, at 23, figuring out how I was going to live, survive. How can I say? At 23, I was trying to figure out how I was going to orchestrate, navigate my life as a young man that had affinities for young men. And I met a few. I won't mention any names, but before I went into the Army, I worked in private industry, and I spent the night with a guy that worked at the company that I worked at. And it was a very intimate night. I loved it. And that was my first encounter with the male. But it scared the bejesus out of me because I was raised in the Baptist church. So you know what that... And no, I didn't fool around with anybody as a teenager. You didn't dare. You didn't dare. How would you even... Oh, no, no. Oh, there was a lot of guys. Oh, man. When I became a traffic officer came up to me, and he's deceased now. He used to live down the street from me. And I met him for lunch, and he said, John, remember I used to come by your house, and you never even look at me? I said, well, why should I look at you? And he looked at me while we were having lunch, and he said, you're the same John Coleman, in denial. And he said, I was in love with you, John, and you never even recognized me. And I told him, I said, man, you need to change your language. I got a family. You got a family. And it was there that he told me he was going to leave his wife and children and go and be with this person in another city. I begged him not to. At that time, I was a chaplain in the department that I worked in. And I begged him not to do that. I said, you shouldn't do that. You're making he did it. He's no longer with us. And when a relative of mine told me that he had passed away, I recall the conversation. And then I said to myself, you made the right choice, John. You made the right choice, because that could have been you. And he told me at lunch that day that, you know, how he felt about me. And I didn't feel that way about him, because all of that was blocked from my mind. All I was thinking about was a very successful adult life. when I married my dear wife, it was only after a few days she knew, because I couldn't. And I'm talking to you like this because I want to let you know what people in my life, the young ones, are experiencing. I know what they're experiencing. They're experiencing what we that are gay people have always experienced in our lives. It was horrible. The choices that I had to make against me, but I did it in order to survive. And in some supernatural way, God called me to be a pastor, a preacher. I went to grad school, paid over $45,000 for a master's in Christian theology, went to Cal State Dominguez, got a bachelor's degree in philosophy. My minor was sociology. For a time, I studied psychology because I was trying to look into me. I'll never forget the first book that I, psychology book that I bought by, who was that guy? Sigmund Freud. And he was talking about human sexuality. It was an orange paperback book, little hand paperback book. And I bought that thing. Checked it out of a library. I don't know which one, but I never took it back because it was a thick book and I was reading through it. And I wanted to find out what my problem was. How come I wasn't crazy about women? How come I wasn't crazy about them? And you know what? I heard the stories. I read the stories. At that time, if there was any kind of story in a magazine about gay men, it was mainly about white gay men, not black gay men, because no. Even though there were black gay men in the community, the black gay men that I saw in the community were repulsive to me because they were super rough, feminized. And I was a man that did not ever want to be a woman. I didn't want to be viewed as a woman. I am a man, okay? Like I said, I wasn't on the DL. I just came out of the closet later in life. And I'm making this cast because I want some of my new friends that come to my website and that go to my social media page to know that if I appear to be awkward and I don't know the people that you know or do that, is because I was in the closet, because I was a pastor. I believe, and I'll stake my life on this, called by God to proclaim not anything against LGBT. Because whenever I got on that subject matter, of course, the congregation, and I'm saying, tell your children to not choose a path that will get them in trouble or put them in harm's way. If I did come out and say something negative about homosexuality, you must know that I was pressured to compromise myself by someone else. But I could not consciously, verbally, condemn anyone that was homosexual, because I'd be condemning myself. You know, this is my website. I can say what I want to say, and I want to say this before I pass away, because I don't want to pass away, and especially for my new friends, whom I love these people. I love them so much. And I know how difficult it is for many of them, even though we're living in this new advanced society. Every time there's a gay pride parade, I am blessed to be able to attend when I can see the people up and down the street with the flags. That's why I have a flag outside of my window here in the Lucy Coleman studio. I am proud that I can verbalize that. Oh, I know many of my friends that before I had that flag flying under my African flag, they would come by. They don't come by anymore. They don't want to be associated with that. Good. good. God made me the way I am. He made my brothers and sisters and the ones that are having an identity crisis now and view themselves as this over that. God made these people. His spirit is in them as it was in me. Now, the inevitable question is, well, John, why did you pretend for so long? I had to feed my family, people. I had to live in a world where being gay, come on, man, the way other guys would look at you. And I wasn't the kind of guy that would stare at other guys like that. I've never been like that. I was a man in nature in all ways. The military taught me that. The military taught me that. And I loved being in the military. It was wonderful. That's why I love watching football games. And that's one of the things that is disparaging to me. There's not enough gay guys that I know that like to watch a good football game, except for looking at those fine, handsome men running around on that field like that. I can understand that. But the game itself is a game of strategy, offense against defense. It's a game where one coach has a play card against the other coach's play card, and they're both out there trying to win, trying to make it work for them. That's why I love those kind of sports. I find a lot of young gay men, middle-aged gay men, don't like sports like that, because if you grew up gay in a household, you didn't sit with the regular guys learning that. Now, where did I learn it? Because I didn't learn it from my father. He wouldn't have too much to do with me. He didn't like the fact that I was light like that. I recall when I when I joined the church, you know, and I went to church, and my father knew my pastor. He knew my mentor, and I'll never forget what he said to him. He said, well, I hope you can do something with John. I never could. And I kind of knew what that meant, because I was 23 years old, but I got married, and after we had kids, growing up in this very house that I'm in today, my dad came by with his wife, his third wife, not my mom, and he kissed me on my neck and hugged me tight. He never kissed me like that and hugged me tight. And he said, you made me so proud. Why? Because I was a pastor of a church? Why? Because I was leading a religious community? I'm still gay. But see, he didn't think I was gay anymore because I made children. You had to do that to be legitimate. And Lucy wanted children, and I wanted to make her happy. See, we had a truly loving relationship. I didn't meet Lucy on a Friday night. Let's jump between the sheets and do that. When I married her, my pastor said to me, this woman you will happen to hold until death do you part. And I said, I do. I wasn't thinking about no other man in my life or stuff like that. I speak with a lot of my friends now, and they ask me about, do I believe in marriage between a man and a man? Sure, I do. If that man loves that man. I had a young man that I was tutoring not too long ago, not even a year ago. And he contacted me and he said, I have a boyfriend and he's kind of unhappy with you mentoring me. He thinks that there's something going on, so I can't see you anymore. I said, good day, man. And while he was telling me, I was erasing all of his information out of my phone, because I'm for a gay man living his reality the way he wants to live it, with whom he wants to live it with. And there should be no interference, not even from a gay mentor. And I remember many a night I fed that boy some food and he had somewhere to lay his head, because, hey, it's rough out there in those streets. I can say right now that I'm proud that I just didn't mentor young gay men, but I mentored straight men also. Both of my two sons are doing very well. One of them is on the other side of the planet, of the earth, in Papua New Guinea, doing very good, been over there well over a year and doing good. And the other one, that is straight, finally married his baby's mother. I don't like this baby mama stuff. Finally married his baby mama, came by my house and told me, thank you, gave me a hug. He said, thank you for everything you've done for me, John. And I've done a hell of a lot for him, too. Though I have a lot of sons. I used to tell my God, for those of you that don't believe in God, I'm not going to call you out of your mind. I'll just say that you haven't been connected to the life-giving spirit of the only one that causes us to be free and truthful and dynamic about who we are, where we are, why we are, when we are, and what we are. You see, now I could do this. I couldn't make a webcast like this 3 years ago. I couldn't do it. You know why I couldn't do it? Because I was worried about hurting someone else's feelings. That's what the terrible, terrible process of being colonialized would do to you. We are human beings. None of us are alike. All of us are different. We have different drives. We have different modus operandi to guide our lives. And so when I come clean, I like the slate to be clean, but I want my new friends that are in the life to know that I haven't slept with a whole bunch of people. I don't think that I could ever do that. There are a lot of gay men that don't want to sleep with a bunch of people because that is not a love relationship. I believe that people should find a person that they love. That's what I had to do. Now, wait a minute. My wife was just as innocent as I. My wife was never a citizen of this country, ever. No. No, she had a green card. And she married me because she says, John, I need to stay here. I don't want to, when my visa's up, they're going to ship me back to the Philippines because her aunt was a tyrant. Just use my wife as a slave. Clean this apartment. Do this. Do that. When I met Andalusia, she was a clerk in a bank. And she was sharing an apartment with a young black lady named Judith. That's all I'll call her. And when we started talking, you know, I said, I'm going to marry you. It was a funny thing because I was young and 23 and Lucy was young and 21, 22. And I told her, I said, girl, I'm going to marry you. And you know, she did. She jumped up and put her hands around my neck and I swung her around and we were both young and didn't have no gray hair. And I kissed her and I said, this is the woman I'm going to marry. This is the woman I'm going to. I had never slept with a woman. Oh, I tried when I was in Korea. I did. I sure did. I went out to Big Sue's Alley and tried to buy me a piece. That's the way they said it back in the day. It was me and all I remember is a white boy's last name, Peterson. He said, have you been out on pass yet, John? I says, nope, because you know all the brothers from Philly, D.C., from Miami, from L.A., and they all been out there, and all of them come back and, hey, man, have you been out there? It only costs this and that. I'm a virgin. So I went out with this white guy named Peterson, and we went out, and I said, I'm going to see what this being with a woman is all about. I'm just coming clean with it. Because, see, I don't have anything to fear from anyone. Nothing happened. Couldn't even get a rise, if you know what I mean. Couldn't even do it because it wasn't in my nature. It never was in my nature. When I was young teenager. It never was in my, never, ever. And it never is in the nature of any gay person to have same-sex relations unless they were forced or coerced or got loaded. See, that's why when I speak with young gay men, I ask them, are you homosexual or are you gay? Because that's two different things. And if you cannot define what those two different things are, you're going to find yourself negotiating with someone about who you are. And what kept me from negotiating with anyone about who I was, I never put it out to people that I was that. Now, here's the strange part of it. 25 minutes into this weird thing that I'm doing here in the Lucy Coleman studio, that you know, the people never, I asked the people after I, you know, am officially out of the pastorate and out of the pulpit, did you know that I was gay? And you'd be surprised. They say, yes. I said, why? I didn't switch. I didn't talk like a woman. And why didn't you confront me about it? And do you know what 90% of them told me? 90%, I want all my gay brothers to listen to me. 90% told me, John, we don't care. You brought us the word of God, and we saw God working through you and your family and everything that you have and everything that you would have in the future. He said, we wanted that, but we knew that you were gay. And I asked a few of them, well, how did you know that I was gay? And he said, because you never made a pass at a woman. And he said, most preachers and churches are either on the DL, on the down low, because they got their boys that they sleep with. I don't want to talk about nobody, but I'll just call him Eddie Short. So you know who I'm talking about, that kind. And he said, and so I said, did I ever make a pass at any of you? No, you didn't. But I will say this, and I'm not going to mention any names, because in case somebody hears about this and know who they are, they may pass as at me. I have been approached in the pastor's study many a time by a man that wanted a fond embrace and a kiss and a hold and all of that. I was never ashamed to give it to them because I knew that they were starving for affection when it came to getting it from their wives. That's why, you know, I had to sing on my website a couple of days ago about Equipping Marriage Part 8, and it was three sections to it, and I kind of went off. I remember that, and I kind of went off, and I was telling these women, you need to make love to your men. Your men need, and I knew quite a few men in the church that I pastored that I had to not get naked, and because I've never done that, but I have hugged them and gently kissed them in my study. One man asked me, do you love me? Am I horrible to look at? No, I said, brother, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. See, women are different from men, but men have negotiated themselves into a position now. Now, the harmful thing, and I think it's too late for our community, for the black community, the harmful thing is that the situation has gotten so bad between males and females in terms of, because when you look at Christianity, you can't talk to a person concerning their roles. They aren't going to hear you when you tell a female, well, your role is to cook, is to clean the house, is to do that. See, that was when I was pastoring a church. You don't do that now. But I met some wonderful guys that are married to each other, and one cooks better than I ever did, and the other one cleans a house and takes care of the car. And I'm just loving this. This is wonderful, much more wonderful than I've seen in certain hetero relationships that was taught by the religion that I embraced. And let me tell you, my family believed it. And my family, my grandparents believed it. My great aunts and uncles all tried to give me that. And that's why when I got out of the Army, I seriously was asking God, what do you want me to do? I was thinking about becoming a radio DJ. That's why I like spinning records on my website now, doing that, because I knew that I had the gift of gab, and I was a communication specialist in the Army. I was a radio teletype operator as a young man. Radio was my gig. And so what does God do? He uses me in a career to hold the black family together, to lift and keep us out of jail, get us off that dope. And then when the AIDS thing broke out in 1979 and 80, I remember Carl Beam. I remember when he had his church down on Jefferson Boulevard. I remember that I had some women come down from on our career day, youth day at the church. I had some women come down, and they were telling the young kids about prophylactics and AIDS and everything like that. And the deacons in the church, the old one says, well, do you believe in? I said, I don't believe in sharing that lifestyle with people, but I believe that these people have a very good intention to try to save us because our people are on the way down. I was telling him, we all can't just have sex with anybody that we want to have sex with. But I never met with Carl Beam. He's gone now. He died, I think, this year, yes, 2021. I never had an association with him, but I met some of the people that were under his tutelage, some of the nicest, finest people that I've ever met in my life. And I feel badly that I did not, because I think that I would have been a greater force for more gay people in the community if I had gotten on board years ago. But I was in the closet. And that's what society does to you. Society was telling me, oh, no, you can't be coming out that closet, boy. You do that, man. You know, you got, come on, I was a chaplain for the LAPD. They would have graduations at Parker Center, and I would be the one that would give the benediction there. I got pictures of it. I got a picture of me now in my office right there with the then black chief of police. And so I said, oh, no, I'm not going to come out and tell anybody that I'm gay. I'll lose all this position that I'm in and everything. That's the way I was thinking. Now, I'm at, it seems like the end of my days with this COVID and everything, and my heart is not as strong as it used to be. I had to come out and do this webcast because I want my friends to know I love you guys. I do. But we got to protect ourselves, and we have to be very, very careful because there is sickness and illness out there. And for the group of us that don't like the particular, well, I see, I don't even know how to say it. And my daughters have been trying to help me formalize this. I was telling my oldest daughter today, I'm going to have to make this webcast because I'm tired of, you know, I can't sit down with all my new friends and tell them each individually. And I really like this new pastor, Sammy, that I met because he's full of energy the way I was. He reminds me of me. So I know that there's a God. Now, some of my straight Christian friends would say, oh, you've really gone crazy. You mean to tell me, I remember when you said that there is no such thing as a gay pastor. I said, well, I had to say that because I was a gay pastor and I was your pastor. What's the matter with you, fool? I'm not going to throw my income and my way of living away because you're small in your mind, believing crazy stuff. My goodness. Marriage is honorable above all things, and the bed is undefiled. That's somewhere in the book of Hebrews. In other words, if you love a person, marry them. When I love Lucy, I said, listen, I ain't never been with no woman before, so I don't have any track record of being with a woman. But I tell you this, this is what I told my wife. I will never hit you. I will never treat you bad. I will take care of the children that we have together. You will never be hungry. Our children will never be in need of anything. And to this date, it is just the way I said it, because I'm a man. That's how Jah made me. The Creator fashioned me with that. I have the attributes of a man. And when it comes to me and my private expressions of intimacy, I have more of those private expressions of intimacy going towards men, because I understand men far more than I will ever understand women. And that is why it has never annoyed me when I've seen women get on with each other and love each other, hug each other, kiss each other, affirm each other, stand by each other's side, lift each other up. And then when you look at men, what do you see us doing? Black man killing black man. You don't kill your same tribe members. The hell's wrong with you? You don't go around and kill the people in your tribe that can help you live. So I hope that that gives a little bit more clarity on who John Coleman is. I was highly educated in Christian theology, and I use that in order, and I don't believe on it. Listen here. You know, when God told the Israelites when they went into the Amorites, the Jebusites, the Hittites, the Moabites, and all them dites and bites and everything, and told them to kill all them men, women, and children, I don't think that's God. I know what I taught years ago when I said, hey, if God said to do it, and you God's child, you have to do it. What if God told a group of nitwits to go out and kill all the gay people? No, God's not going to turn on his own creation. See, you have to understand, man, religion is used as a tool to not only enslave your minds, and if something sounds jackass backwards to you in that book you call the Bible, you need to throw that mess aside and not attribute that insanity to God. Now, in my point of view, now you can take this any way you want to, especially those of you that are staunch evangelicals that believe in, well, you know, some staunch BS. Don't come my way, because I'll never fall for that. I had a friend of mine, I love this black pastor. I know he didn't mean it when he told me he thought I was going to hell because I told him about my personal views the way I'm telling you right now. He said, John, you're going to hell when you die. I said, there's no reason in the world where a divine creator of the entire universe would send me to a scorching, burning hell because I speak my mind in truth to a man like you who is pimping other people for a living. That's one thing I never did. Matter of fact, I told a pastor that I recently met, a young gay pastor, I said, if you ever ask me to speak at your church, don't try to pay me a cent. I will never charge anyone anything for what God has given to his creation to be absolutely free. So to my gay friends, to my newer and newer gay friends, because I'm making more and more gay friends on Facebook, and they come into my website, and they can learn a lot about me. I put this up because I want you to know why. I mean, a little bit about me. No, I don't have a partner in my life right now because I'm Aquarian. I'm a difficult man. I'm a difficult kind of a person to fall in love with because I'm going to tell you like it is. I have a couple of male friends that were pretty friendly with me, but not to the point of marrying, because like one of them told me a couple of days ago, you and I could never get together because, see, you don't want to have a lot. I've never wanted to have a lot. I told Lucy when we moved in this house in 1974, I said, get used to it. She said, why? I said, because we both going to die out of this house. I'm satisfied with what God gave me. I've never been a person that wanted a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, sure, I bought a used convertible Lexus, and that was with some of the insurance money that my wife left, because I said, you know, heck, I want to drive me a nice sports car. I'm old enough. I'm over 50. I can treat myself well enough. But, man, just to want to get a bunch of money and junk and stuff to parade it in front of me and to show people, look at what I got to compare to what you got. I'm not that kind of a person. I've never been that kind of a person. I will always be the kind of person that will share what I have with anyone that doesn't have. I've always been that kind of a man. I was that kind of a pastor then, and I try to argue myself out of being a pastor, but I can't. I'm waiting to meet the person that can love me on my level and I can love them on theirs. And we just make each other happy as all get out and don't give a rooty toot what nobody think about it. And we can walk down the street, brothers, holding hands with our hand around each other's waist. See, we can do that in this country, in this part of the country over here in California. Now, you go to certain parts of Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, can't do it because a lot of colonialized minds are there and half of them is in the closet just the way I was, but most of them are on the DL from what I hear, because relations between men and women, unless God is involved in making that a fruitful relationship, is turning into corruption. Thank you for coming to my website. Thank you for allowing me to take the time to come clean with it, right? Okay, I love you. And listen, I did not say stop reading your Bible. And no, I did not say stop going to church. I just won't attend a church like I used to pastor, because that brings division. If you can find a church where everybody can go there and love freely, worship God freely, and not turn their nose up or down at anybody else that don't dress like them, look like them, talk like them, walk like them, that's the kind of church I want to go to. I don't want to go to no church where we all quoting this creed, this oath of obedience to some long dead pastor who left it on the wall. Now we got to hold to his treatise. And I want to tell you this as I end up here. Most of these men that are staunch like that got some dirt. Hey, you better listen to PJ. They got some dirt on their hands. And I know because I used to be in a radio booth with them. Many of them are dead, but there's a few that's still alive. Don't worry. I'm not going to say a damn thing. Thank you for coming to my website. It's been such a treat.